Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Table Slam, or possibly the blog to be named later, or podcast. What are we calling these things these days?
Table Slams.
Table Slams, as is. My name is Ian Fisk. I am the executive director of the Mentor Capital Network, and I am joined in our library slash studio by...
My name is Sohaib. I'm a school fellow. We'll be serving in Mentor Capital Network.
Jonathan Levine, CEO of Folio Materials.
Hey, Jonathan, you are passing through Washington, D.C. What brings you to town?
Slow rowboat. My wife and co-founder is on a government panel to help decide other people's research grants, and this is a good excuse to see nieces and swing them around.
Tell us a little bit about your entrepreneurial adventure by Folio.
Oh, boy. So... we're a really weird beast. We're a materials company, but the first use case was water in sort of universal access to drinking water through a 20-cent, 20-liter water purifier, just a simple paper. So on the one hand, we're the world's first ever consumer goods water purifier, 20 cents. On the other hand, we're this new materials technology company, and those sort of point in different but the same direction because we're sort of taking materials technology and using it to solve real-world problems. And then the way you commercialize that happens to be, okay, consumer goods and retail.
Uh-huh. And what's your company doing now? I tried to give you some introductions to get you into pharmacies in Mexico and Ecuador, if I remember correctly, and then you promptly went to Bangladesh.
We spent a year in Mexico and shut down Mexico. We had a team in Mexico. So we're on year four, and the journey has been, what we're doing is sort of de-risking different use cases. And in the case of the water purifier, it's turned out that because we're creating a new category, there's a bunch of things that are just different that you say, okay, the physical form factor is different. Yeah, it turns out this is just retail, but all the water purifying people are not in consumer goods retail. They're just in other verticals like big industrial capital equipment and sewers and, you know, durable good appliances, which are very different things than fast-moving consumer goods. So we went to Mexico, South Asia, Southeast Asia, and sort of did some lean consumer research and narrowed down to Bangladesh in South Asia. And so the big news is really a shift from the consumer proof points, where we now have repeat sales. Mm-hmm. We now have 45% repeat purchase rate, which is four times higher than anybody else's water purifier, full stop. Now, this is at small scale, it's at a couple hundred consumers, but nobody's ever got, you know, 10% is the kind of really good numbers you get after 5 or 10 years, typically. But that's because we're willingness to pay. We're at a 20-cent price point instead of a $20 or $30 price point. And so if you look at emerging markets, yeah, well, things that cost $20 or $30 don't sell very well into the industrial working class or middle class. Things that buy 10 cents, 20 cents, everybody buys them. So... This is sort of proof of the hypothesis we have when we started, which is the different price points really are apples and oranges and is going to have this very different thing. But with that, we're now doing enterprise sales. We're dealing with very large corporates. Unilever is very happy with their first project. The head of their innovation group just spent the entire day with my CEO down in Bangladesh. And we're waiting to get the go-no-go from them, but... market number two will be coming up soon for a sales pilot. There's a very large consumer goods company that's a top three brand in Bangladesh that we're working with for a 2020 rollout. It is sort of a city scale. So it's neighborhood scale, city scale, country scale. Yeah, so enterprise sales is really the big thing. And then we have a variety of US use cases. Stop there.
What are you doing now? What's something you're doing now that you learned by doing? And also, I want to point out that Jonathan and his co-founder are properly paper educated, both in paper and about paper, PhDs. And Terry, his wife, has a PhD about paper. But Jonathan is one of the more obsessive people about learning by doing. The MythBusters of entrepreneurship, as it were.
What made my week was I've never watched MythBusters actually. Mm-hmm. But somebody posted a video of Adam Savage who made a rickshaw mm-hmm. that he then had one of the Boston Dynamics robots mm-hmm. pull, and it totally made my day. go to Bangladesh and ride in rickshaws a lot.
So, what have you learned by doing that you didn't know 4 years ago?
We always pictured, how do you have a 20-cent water purifier sold on every single shelf? And we're really the materials company, right? We're a couple of material scientists. We figured, look, you know who's really good at marketing? Who's good at making consumer, manufacturing consumer products, and then selling, distributing and selling consumer products? Unilever, right? We figured, look, we'll make the thing in the lab. They'll figure out how to productize it. They'll figure out how to do the consumer research. They'll put it on the store shelf. They'll do the sales, the physical distribution, marketing. None of these things are rocket science. They're all really known disciplines, and Unilever is a very large company with a lot of very smart people who do exactly this all day long. I talk about how to do consumer research and consumer marketing and teach Unilever people things regularly. I have a PhD in environmental engineering. The big companies are not good at innovation. The innovation arms are good at innovation, but they're at big companies, and so they're constrained. And a lot of them refer to it as the machine. The machine is really good at making 100 million widgets, putting them on the shelf, and selling them at large scale. It's the getting going part, that the lean startup stuff that they have a hard time doing in-house, so they purposefully hire out of house. You know,
there's also a risk factor.
There's absolutely a risk factor. How do you...
When you have a really large house, you don't want to risk it in a way that people with really small houses might be willing to do.
Well, and then yes, absolutely. And then if you've got a bunch of people who are working on 10 million, you know, million, 10 million, 100 million dollar brands, or maybe the district scale sales of those brands, their KPIs and bonuses are based on things, and career progression are based on, how do I take $10 million and make it $10,100,000 in January, right? How do I grow at not 3%, but 5% this year, because then I get to keep moving up the corporate ladder. It's really hard to ask that person to then come and work on a new product, because there might be no revenue for the next X number of quarters or years, which is in career time beyond the horizon, and so you have these sorts of problems. So I would say I do a lot of consumer research. I know an awful lot about the consumer goods and retail sectors, and particularly in Bangladesh and South Asia, and definitely, you know, did not see that one coming.
Mm-hmm. Who do you learn from? Who do you look up to as somebody in the field? Feel free to answer in the scientific field, but since the people who are going to listen to this aren't necessarily going to know, also possibly in the social enterprise or consumer goods field, that you've learned from or has been providing you with, either providing you with good advice directly or indirectly?
Look, I haven't done science in 4 years. So, job's been CEO for a lot of years. I aggressively find people who know stuff. So I talk to all sorts of people, hundreds, thousands, probably thousands or more. It's kind of the nature of the beast is you're lining up all these dots to sort of fill in the picture. What I would say is you're trying to fill in the puzzle. By the way, you don't know how many puzzle pieces it's going to take. And most people have one to several puzzle of the puzzle pieces, but nobody has all of them. It's just one of the deals. Some of the people have a lot more of the puzzle pieces, and some of the people have been... So one of the big surprises is in, and it's kind of the people in your networking in, is, look, the people who operate companies see a completely different set of problems, because there's a lot of real-world problems that have to do with people and uncertainty of information, and how do you make decisions, and how do you pattern match into what do you do with this ambiguous situation of you've got 10 people, and how do you go from 10 to 12, and, well, gee... You know, the person who's in a completely different geography and has a completely different set of, like, you're the first in your generation to get an undergraduate degree in pick a country, and you can go and work for Big Co, you can go work for Startup Co. But Startup Co might be more interesting, or short, right? What do you pay such people? Do you pay them local rate? Do you pay them international rate? There's all these sorts of questions that are sort of, so I mean, Mitra Arjun is, of course, who Ian is, among other things, thinking, our mutual friend, who is a Folia board member. He became a Folia board member by simply being so darn useful that we had to formalize things, and, you know, coffee became dinners and walks in woods and board meetings and lots of et cetera, et cetera, because Mitra's just had a ton of companies.
So I told you we have the Mitra rule, right?
What's the Mitra rule?
When the Mentor Capital Network started, we started as a business plan competition.
Right.
And then we very quickly realized that the amount of resources that went into entering were greater than the amount of effort, or the amount of effort that went in was greater than the amount of resources that went out. So we had to change what we had to do. So we have changed it into an efficient organization that hopefully does not take people away from running their companies.
Yes.
Lots of amazing peers out there running great programs if you have the time to spend with them.
Yes.
And if you do, then you should do those as well, or instead of us.
Right.
But efficiency and then connecting people with feedback, with mentors, and with peers addressing similar challenges in other places. But in the early days, when we still had prizes, people would enter, but it felt, you know, inappropriate to have people reviewing and also entering at the same time.
True.
But so many of the best entrants were the best reviewers, like the people who are in the field now, doing the work now. Mm-hmm. And we had to figure out a way to get people, and the person who clarified this for us was Mitra, to get him as a reviewer, even though he was basically throwing the companies he was working with into our program every year. So we would see either companies he was running or companies he was advising, because he saw the value of what we were doing. So we arranged a way that he couldn't influence the outcome of whatever prizes we have. And now that we don't have prizes, it's not a problem. But in the early days, it was called the Mitra rule, so that you could, when you saw talent on both sides,
yes,
you could use it.
Look, one of the things that the ecosystem gets, there's two flavors of how they get things wrong. One, almost every single conference is oriented towards investors and finance people. Let me know when there's a conference where you go and you talk about things like, how do we set salaries? How do we set a salary plan across multiple different countries? How do I normalize across different functions, right? These are really hard things. Or how do you do logistics into a new territory? How do you do, right? There's all these really basic, very operational things that have to do with running a company. And nobody ever has sessions about those things. And then the second thing is, very rare. And they're usually a very, very small fraction. They're usually 10 to 25% or less of the conference. So I'm not going to SoCap to learn from other CEOs and COOs and other VP plus people, how is it that you solve this problem? Because they don't get those sessions don't typically get, they're really minor. But that's where a lot of your biggest challenges are, particularly in the first few years. But I'm sure they don't go away. but then the second thing is, the most useful people are other CEOs, COOs, VP of product, head of sales, and the thing that social enterprise does not do, that Silicon Valley, specifically, Silicon Valley and San Francisco do, and other startup systems, I don't know that they do it. One of the reasons why San Francisco and Silicon Valley are so good is that if venture capital blah invests in you, the head of sales over there at the company that's 4 years further than you comes and sits down with you and your head of sales and teaches you. And they don't say, look, we're going to do some digital marketing and go and get some customers. They say, this is the program. You're going to use the following pieces of software. Your people are going to have the following thing. This is going to be the protocol. This is the exact set of recipe-like instructions that your junior people cannot screw up. Oh, who are you going to hire? You're going to hire these people. I'll show you how to go to LinkedIn and hire exactly who you need to fill this role, how much you're going to pay them, what you're going to do, how you're going to set up their office. And now the head of sales at company that's just gone from 500K a year in turnover to 50 million a year in turnover, the person who led that process sits in your office and makes you do it with them. And we don't do that, and we should. Because the only person who really knows how to get you to go from 500K to 50 million is the person who just did it, and they just did it in the last 2 years. Because the tools change and other things.
Yeah.
But there's also...
What goes wrong, it turns out, is it doesn't change as much with time, but what goes right does change with time. Earlier, we were talking about what makes a good consulting firm, and it's capturing the learnings from each of the engagements. What makes a good VC firm is capturing the learnings.
The challenge with a lot of the programs and so forth is we were in one of the programs. The other companies were great, but having one day a week set aside to be negative about other people was a great way to destroy any communal spirit, any communal helping.
It presented as being negative?
No, it's just the outcome. You've got six companies. Why on earth are you judging each other and trying to decide which ones? Why are you spending 20% of your time on that? You should be spending 20% or 50% of your time over beers and coffee talking. What kind of real-world problems do you have? How does that apply to what I'm doing? Okay, cool. COO, COE.
All the, so I have sat in on, I don't know, probably dozens of different
social enterprise incubators and accelerators sessions. I would think that most people want the outcome of addressing real challenges and helping people constructively move forward. It doesn't always happen, but I know that I've sat in sessions where that has happened. Over a program that large, you're going to have variance, right?
Yeah, we did not. That was the opposite. It got in the way of that happening significantly, right? Whereas what you're trying to do, I think, is much more. You can get that.
So what worked and what didn't work with your experience with the Mentor Capital Network?
It's the same broad problem, which is people don't pay nearly enough attention to segmenting what industry is a company in, not what subject. We do water. Mm-hmm. Well, water is not an industry. So if you say water, it tells you nothing about what the company does. What do they produce? What do they sell? Who do they sell through? Are they a capital? Are they doing giant sewer pipes? Or are you selling consumer goods? Or are you an NGO? Are you a for-profit? Yeah. Are you a large firm? Are you a small firm? These are all just really different things. And that kind of is true across a lot of things. And so without...
Lights.
Okay. Okay. But, I mean, the point is that name a agriculture. Okay, fine, but agriculture is a broad subject area. It doesn't tell you anything about the kind of business you're in. And so the more specifics you can get into and say,
well, it tells you something, it's not enough.
Right, yes.
Right. And so we, you know, so it's
how do you map into that? Right? And then there's practical things. So Cuthbert, you know Cuthbert?
Mm-hmm.
I know you know Cuthbert. So we were on a call with him. So we were sitting next to each other by coincidence at an event, and he like 2 weeks ago. And he's like, wait a minute, I know you. Hey, and so, you know, we went and we got beer and this and that and the other, and I just was helping him out on a bunch of legal docs. He was like, hey, can you give me your opinion on this and that and the other? And there are a bunch of other really practical things that, you know, I made like 10 intros for him because he's got a great company. He's trying to solve the trash problem in secondary cities in West Africa. What do you do with all this trash? Can you make your organic fertilizer and sell the organic fertilizer? There's different lessons that I who do something completely different, I can say, well, I do have legal documents that you could totally use here. Or, well, if you're looking, look, get a bunch of advisors, put them on a slide. People consider that a way of de-risking. Oh, well, here's the pay schedule for advisors in form of equity that you can now go and do. And this is really simple and implementable. And now this is a 5-minute thing that I've told you to do, and you're done. You don't have to now spend a week investigating and figuring it out, and it's a whole thing, right? It's a solution instead of an open-ended problem. But I can't tell him anything about how to run trash trucks and how to make a franchise, a digital app. I don't know anything about apps. I don't know anything about this. But there's some parts that I can actually help out with. That's where that understanding and that meta self-understanding of where what do I know that actually maps onto this person, and what do I not know that does not map onto this. We were in 500 startups, the accelerator program. Yeah. What they were good at was they walked in assuming that if you had a problem that you had been working on, that you were generally competent and had done all the reasonable things. So unless they were a sub-subdomain expert in that very narrow thing, they would say, I will not comment on it because I'm sure you have done the same reasonable things as I would have thought. I'm pretty sure you probably have thought more about it and longer because it's your company. But I will find you a sub-subdomain expert who knows about, and it doesn't matter what we're talking about, operations, hiring, product sales, it doesn't matter, right? I will find somebody who's the sub-subdomain expert, but I will walk in the room and assume that you have done the basics correct. Because I assume you're just sort of generically smart, I'll assume that you've done your job well as a founder, and let's move on from there. In the social enterprise world, you see it split. I mean, this is sort of across all startup stuff in general. It's not a social enterprise particular thing, right?
Yeah.
Some people walk in and assume you're incompetent. Some people walk in and assume you are competent, and you just need an expert.
Or some people walk in and start by questioning why you're doing something as opposed to what you're like. Not the business why, the social why, which sort of takes you off track. One of the things we found, the phrase I started using a couple years ago, is we try and identify people who are passionate about their expertise.
Okay.
You know, you're really, really good at whatever the thing is you do. I am not going to tell you or Terry anything about water filters.
Okay.
Right? And figuring out what is it you know about marketing and or hiring.
Let me give you something way more extreme. I regularly get on calls and people think I don't know what a convertible note is. Yeah, Ian's just given me this shocking reaction because I've raised a lot of these. I've been raising with convertible notes for 4 years. Of course I know what a convertible, like... Why, right? It's one of those, like, wouldn't you at least ask the clarifying question? right? I'm 4 years into a business. They've been told I've raised a bunch of capital. Yes, this is a basic like bread and butter CEO thing that you need to learn, and it's not rocket science, right? But there's this, like, I'm like, really? Why would I be in this phase? I've told you I've raised this money. I've told you I've got this kind of customers. Why wouldn't I know the basics? How would that have gotten skipped, right? And so the startup space has a lot of weird power dynamics. And by the way, investors are often, social enterprise is often the worst about weird power dynamics. And we should help out everybody in the world except the entrepreneurs who are in the room. They should sleep in bunk beds or worse and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, wait, hold on, wait a minute. So we should help all the people who live there, but the actual entrepreneurs, screw them. That kind of crap.
Something like that. So any questions from our...
No,
come on.
Yeah, I'm good. I'll take notes.
Okay. I got to interview 16 folks who ran Social Enterprise Accelerators.
Cool.
Two of whom I hadn't met before. But one of the things that I asked everybody at the end is, what do you want me to ask the next person I talk to in sort of this format? So at the end of each of the questions, I said, what do you want me to ask the other folks? And then I worked it into my questions. In the end, we weren't able to ask all the questions, so I sent them a follow-up email saying, here are the questions you wanted to know about each other. And of course, they're all really busy and probably won't do it, but some of them will.
Okay, so like one.
So, we're a bunch of other, see?
One of the healthy things that happens, that's the reason for Silicon Valley having the success that it had, was this sort of concept of a small enough community to self-reference. So they say that one of the reasons why early phase checks happen in Silicon Valley is that now it's really San Francisco, but you have a small enough set of individuals who can actually refer and are a trust network and will actually refer companies and so forth. But the same thing's true for how the companies got formed and so forth. And so you had people to interact with. How do we, so in the international social enterprise part of it, how do you have a community? You don't have a physical place. By definition, people should be in, pick a country, they should not be in one particular physical location. How do you get innovative companies
to create a
community?
Not by definition, that's a particular choice. There's a lot of local, one of the reasons I love Washington, D.C. is I can keep one foot in the neighborhood and one foot in the world. And I am very involved in the Washington, D.C., my own local community, even though it is Washington, D.C., even it could be San Francisco or New York or Boston. There's stuff going on there that is local and tangible as well.
But there is an element about certain really new international social enterprise stuff that you say, look, if you want to take somebody who's making an innovative new way to do a toilet, if there's anybody in the same city or country as them, there's one or two other.
Except Nairobi.
Yes, they're all in Nairobi. Yes, exactly.
I think we have four active human biofuels, I believe was the term it was located.
Okay, so let's use the example of Cuthbert. I was like, well, how many people are, he's setting up, how do you do trash? How do you make a franchise model where you have the trucks going and they've got an operating system on basically a smartphone and then people can go. And so the question is, look, how many people can you talk to? So I introduced him to somebody who's here, who's taking food scrap in the United States, and she's New York City and has a facility in Rochester. Somebody else who's in Bangladesh, he's doing plastics recycling and collection, and then making that and then selling the plastic, because there's just not that many people who are like...
And you already know Spilicus, right? WeCyclers?
I don't know.
So the big West African play for that is a company called WeCyclers?
See, that's you. You should tell them that. Great. But you get the point, which is the number of people trying to do this and trying to do this in some sort of scalable manner is very different than the number of people doing it locally. Presumably there's a lot of people with a truck who are going and picking up trash, right? If you make any one particular issue, it'd be nice to be able to actually be able to talk to that set of people. The number of people doing innovative water filters is exceedingly few. Exceedingly, exceedingly few. We actually are a technology company, right? There's essentially one. He's in Bangladesh also. That's about my entire list. Right? There's just not that many. The handful of others are like, there's a professor at Berkeley who invented UV filtration. There's just not that many in this kind of space. And so it's just hard to get the people in the room. How do you create community? And some of it may be, do we do that by domain space? Do we do that by vertical? By something about it, right? But how do we create something where you can sit down and have a beer or a coffee or a whatever regularly? And I don't know if that looks virtual. And so I, at one point I started poking around creating a Facebook community that was something like international.
How do you make that international? It's not one more thing to log into.
Right.
And oh. how would you take, so. So
oh, it has to be functional. So
yeah.
So
let's take the peer-to-peer calls, mm-hmm. right? So
which you've been doing, which is
right.
Great. You know,
putting folks who are trying to solve the same problem.
When I was in GSBI, I really pushed them. I was like, could we get, the usefulness is largely peer-to-peer. How do you create a Facebook group or a Slack group? 500 Startups has a Slack channel, and there's been like 2,000, I think it's like 2,000 companies with 5,000 or 10,000 entrepreneurs. And they're all on the same Slack channel, and anywhere you are in the world, if I want to get an intro, or if I want to get blah, 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 I could get onto the 500 Startups, and if I happen to be a digital marketing company, this would be unbelievable. For what I do, there's a handful of companies. I mean, one of them, they're now unfortunately defunct, but Labor Voices was super helpful when we were going into
Vegas. Yeah, they're an alumni of ours.
But they're an example of, like, actually, they were super helpful when I first got to Bangladesh. There's a bunch of Bangladeshi social enterprises who I went to, and I said, how do I find a lawyer? Who pays for an accountant? You know, all sorts of very, very practical things. How do I go about recruiting a head of country for the following things? What do I call them? What's the title you give? Because just the title alone means who you will or won't get. If you use executive director, people will think nonprofit. If you use, you know, things like that, right? So you need to pick wisely. Managing director has a legal meaning. You can't say managing director, right? So there's all sorts of things like that. People who are board members and people who are CEOs understand that articles of incorporation in the United States are how these things are defined. And so I have four different roles at the company. I'm legally a shareholder.
Yeah.
As a shareholder, I legally make myself a board of directors member. As a board of directors member, I happen to be the head of the board. As a board member, I am also, by the way, I'm legally the president because that is...
Yeah, secretary is one of the ones that's required.
Because those two are in the Articles of Incorporation.
Mm-hmm.
But then, by the way, I'm then appointed chief executive officer. And that then gives me rights that are in the Articles of Incorporation. They do not... They then say that there's titles of VP and CXO that have certain other things. But that all depends on your Articles of Incorporation.
Yeah.
And by the way, in Bangladesh, managing director has a certain legal role in the world where CEO does not. For instance, there's a weird subtleties of that nature. Anyway, the point I was getting at was 500 Startups, I can get on Slack and I can get a whole bunch of people to, you know, hey, have you dealt with this investor? Oh yeah, they're terrible. Or oh yeah, they're fine. Or hey, has anybody solved this marketing problem or this blah, blah, blah problem? And you know, there are a lot of digital marketing and that.
So how long has that been? So
international hardware, how do I get somebody where I can say, I need to deal with regulatory in country X. I need to deal with logistics in country blah. How do I sort out, here's a problem we have, how do you import, what harmonized code do you need for a product that nobody's ever made before? It's really not obvious, and unless you've actually done this thing, you have no valid opinion or thoughts. You may have an opinion, but you do not know the answer, because harmonized codes and customs are just, there's lions, and it's weird, and it's just the deal. Customs is just its own world, logic does not apply. Up is down, down is up, government bureaucracies, there's a, you know, the goal is to not make things easy, all sorts of fun things. If you've done this problem, I'd love to talk to you. Because this is a critique, right? This is an open, difficult problem.
So I've seen these conversations. So someone who has been promoting sort of online community since 1995, I built one of the first, put your zip code in here, you can volunteer and you can talk about it,
cool.
In Rainman for AOL in 1995, called SurfNet.
Do you know who created the first NGO community in the world online?
Mitra! Yes, well...
Him and a bunch of other people.
Yeah, he's
in like 1982.
Yeah.
But that was actually one of the original use cases, was how do you swap information across continents?
So the thing that we learned, and the thing that I see over and over again, is that hopefully you get lucky and one of your community members creates the sort of engagement and is active in it. Sometimes you have to sort of seed it with not fake posts, but somebody checking in and like somebody on your team making sure that they see action.
Mm-hmm.
I used the Green America, now the Co-op America list, now the Green America list, used to be the best place in the U.S. to find, it was just an email list, but the best place to find exactly the kind of questions you're talking about, except green products mostly in the U.S.
Cool.
And for like 5 or 6 years, like you need, there were like 40 posts a day, but you could like filter through them and find the one you want.
Mm-hmm.
And then, for some reason, it wasn't. I don't know why. I don't know what happened. People switched from a major domo mailing list to some other thing, Facebook, who knows.
Sure.
And this is like 10, 15 years ago that the change happened. Then I would see other lists be the place where I could go, right? There are certain groups on Facebook where there's a lot of activity, and then there isn't.
So here's something.
And I'm wondering, like, what's the magic in keeping the? It's not
okay. So here's a version of what I heard recently. Somebody was telling me the he was the former head of Founders Institute in New York City, and he said 10 years ago he said a very specific year. He was like, there were a ton of people who were trying to build startup community in New York City. So New York City's massive, but hey, who's actually making startups? Because there is a profession of entrepreneurship and things like lean startup concepts and also being scrappy and all these different things, right? And so you say, okay, who can you go and grab a coffee with? Who can you go and talk real shop? And he said at some number of, at some point, let's say it was 2014, whatever the year was, he said something changed. And he said part of it was there were a lot of large companies like Google and Amazon that came to town, to which I reply, New York City had 100,000 computer jobs in 1985. It's not new. Wall Street had computers. Marketing companies had computers. There's a lot of manufacturing in Jersey. Like, there were computers. So, like, it's not a matter of, like, large corporations that happen to do advertising or media companies. Well, okay, there's large media companies. It's something else, right? It's probably something like things became so large that you can't get into a self-referential community because there's too many people.
So, in Washington, D.C., from 2002 to 2008, if you were hosting an event for people who are starting companies, social or frankly otherwise.
Sure.
I was probably either in the room or aware of it or invited.
Right.
As were about 8 or 9 other people whom I can name.
Right.
I mean, not off the top of my head now, but.
Yeah, of course.
But then there came a point, I mean, I don't actually, I do want to blame this on the company I'm about to name, but it's not actually entirely their fault. And that company is, of course, WeWork. Right, so that there were, hold on a minute, you're giving me the look.
Okay.
So there were communities, so the as it were, the co-opting of the term co-working.
Sure.
So I have been co-working since 2003. I was at one point, one of the various weirdnesses of my career is, at one point, I was the longest serving, longest member of the longest continuously operating co-working space in the United States, which meant me almost certainly that I was the longest continuous co-worker in the United States. In one place. I'm sure people have been co-working.
I've been co-working since 10 in the morning.
For some of the earlier places, and some of the WeWorks as they developed, there was somebody whose job it was to go around in at the Affinity Lab. It was Scott Hart. It was Barrett Oski. It was Charles Plank. How you doing? What are you working on?
Right.
Do you know that this person, not just in the room, but like...
Yep.
In the city is doing a thing, and literally,
and
that you talk about the coffee.
That person's job is not simply transactional. They're probably from the community somehow.
Right, and it's, but it became so big.
Okay, so where
I can't do that for 1,000 people.
Where
is
it successful?
Actually, I do.
In Philadelphia, one of the spaces was run by, or is run by, I forget the guy's name, but he's the guy who runs the space. And at first, you're like, this guy's a lawyer. He's like a startup entrepreneur. Why is he doing? Because he's created that thing that you're talking about. And so Philly had this, I think it has to do with like bio companies or whatever it was, but they had a really good space for this kind of stuff because of this, honestly, the one guy seemed to be probably a key part of it. And then he was the node where you might have funders or other bigger entities, and then you've got the individuals. We got to a point where things were a bit too large. So what do you do? How do you have a community? WeWork is in America, is right, it's fairly aseptic. There's glass walls that are dividing, not joining. It's not transparent. Right? It's separating. It doesn't happen.
It's shared office space.
Look, I popped into the Impact Hub in San Francisco. I popped into a few of them. I never know what to do there because I'm not going to get an office there. I don't. I happen to not need an office. I happen to not need to be.
So the idea is you show up for an event, right? So the idea is you show up for an event, right? So
I'm on the calendars, but I.
Yeah.
So you know, that goes back to the community thing.
So if there was some, all right. So
yeah, for the community thing, do you think making a software or a social network like Facebook, but for entrepreneurship or social?
So several people have tried.
And
that's a minimum. Like it happens. I think the issue is people aren't on that network, right? So people who are in the community who walk in. Like when I walked in, I knew so many people there that like I could just walk up and start talking to people. I could just do networking because I knew 30% of the people who were in the San Francisco hub on any given day, despite the fact that I've never actually lived in San Francisco because my work, hippie capitalists. The software wouldn't have helped me because I'm an outsider. I'm not on their platform. I'm not a member. I'm a member over here. and there's a Facebook, I could have pinged saying, I'm here looking for that expert. But transactional help, the things you were talking about earlier with the 500 startups, mm-hmm. that's useful, but a community can't just be transactional.
Well, there has to be, that has to be.
We're a hub community.
That help has to happen, and there has to be going for meals, and then, by the way, those things also
and
happen.
So the greeters, Hub had, like, they called them hosts. They're yeah. greeters, hosts, maitre d', what have you.
Okay.
Hi, how you doing? What are you here for? You might want to talk to this person over there if they're free. Like, doing that, like, as a human, when if you walked in,
you know, Impact
and you're like,
Impact Hub Boston did that when I visited.
So
they walked me over and they
just
introduced me to somebody.
Consistently.
Yeah, they introduced me to somebody. That was really nice. And I was like, you know, it happened to the person was not the right fit, but I was like, that was really nice that they did it. That was the only thing I cared about. I was like, that was really great that they did that.
Yeah.
You know, Cuthbert was in, to keep going back to that, mm-hmm. that case, so he's in from Guinea. So I emailed Rare Columbia Startup Lab and I was like, look, he can use my desk for the whole week. But the problem is always this, like, how do you have a floater desk where people who are the right people, who should be part of that community, are in from out of town for 3 days? How do you have them work there and give them a good enough reason to work there? And $25 desk is not quite the thing,
yeah.
right? There's another thing going on, which is, but it's one of these, like, as we define, as we remove walls, as we make things bigger, but now you're actually one of, right? If 1,000 people might come and visit, well, I can't quite do that. But at the same time, how do I get people to, you know, in Ubud, they had a thing called Hubud. It's their co-working space. And they're trying to get people to come there. And that was cool. That was cool. They specifically are aware that a lot of people go through Bali. If they can have people from other companies, because there's an ecotourism place, if you have other people coming through, if they stop in for the day, if there's where to interact, that'll build in a virtuous, unspecific, but virtuous way.
So to me, it's the hallway effect.
Yes.
So at conferences...
Yes. Most of the action is in the hallway.
Yeah, so whenever I'm putting together a larger event, if we have a speaker, like there's a room where you should be quiet and listen to the presenter because
yes.
they flew here to talk to you. And if you're in co-working, there's a room where you should be quiet because there might be people who actually want to work.
Right.
Don't have to. But we always, like when we just stuff the Affinity Lab, we'd have stuff happening in room A, and then room B would be like, we'd have, you know, drinks and coffee and whatever
sure.
set up. And the idea was, and you could even work in there. What was the... thing where you put a color over your desk to say whether or not people could talk to you, but you just have a space where it's okay to chatter,
right?
And I might move back and forth between the spaces because
I
get certain things done.
One of the reasons why San Francisco still continues to be one of the startup hubs and will is remarkably with all the hey, everything is a meritocracy, yeah, but it's amazingly relational. Humans are so relational in early phase investing
and also
things,
lazy.
Also. When things are very risky and it's hard to get things going, that's when relational trust happens. And SF is how that ends up happening in that sub part of the industry.
So here are the pro and cons of that as one whitish American to another whitish
Absolutely.
Female.
Holy crap, is SF expensive and you're now whittling things out? Yeah.
Right.
And that's
and,
the problem with SF right now.
And it's price, and it's also the bubble, it's the people you know, right? So one of the things, we've been on a couple of calls, so I've been on. And so he has a social media background and he's like, your website could be flashier. I'm like, I know. And some of that is because I haven't done it, and I should. And some of that is for a reason. Go through a couple of calls with me, and you'll see. And we're dealing with people who can't like get regular internet, who had to like travel into town. Like
yep.
they're doing companies like Cuthbert, except that you know Cuthbert
yep.
also has a fancy education. Like he's doing work in an amazing
yeah,
business,
yeah, yeah.
but he's
oh,
he's,
we have the same
he, he's lived in both worlds.
We have the same question: is
right.
is how do you
the
have
people
a website
he's employing?
Works.
Right. So say he finds a partner company that has never gotten a fancy degree or been outside
yep.
their. We want to help them because
yep.
other people can't. How do you, if I just dealt with people
how
that
do
I knew.
How do you look right for the people who are used to presentation in a very flashy way? How do you look right for people who are on a dial-up connection with a dumb phone?
Okay. Some people think videos are great because
yep.
it's a way and it's democratizing because everybody can talk. Well,
there's also some people who want to read. Some people want to have verbal
mm-hmm.
information. Some people want to have video information.
And on my end,
my
as someone who has to see hundreds of applications, as much as I would love for everybody to convey in the way that's best for them, I don't have the time
yep.
to process all that.
Yep.